Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Oh, hey, love your shoes. If you're hearing this, this is your sign to try those on. Trust us, you can totally pull them off. In fact, try on every shoe here if you want. We won't stop you. In our house, you've got unlimited freedom to play. And hey, fall is the perfect season to do, wear, be whatever you want. And with tons of shoes that get you at prices that get your budget, we'll give you something to brag about. So go ahead, try them on. Let us surprise you.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
I love every day is different. It can drive you nuts, but it's also the greatest thing. And you get to be around young men that are at times in their lives where I think you can have a great impact. Like having that impact and knowing that you can help change some people's lives. Like there's nothing better than that for me.
And our guest this week, Adam Fisher, getting ready for his second season as the head men's basketball coach at Temple University. And Adam, thanks so much for the time.
No, thanks for having me, Matt. Excited to be here with you.
So as we are recording this, middle of September, probably, what, about 7 weeks away from the season opening? What's life like? What's the day-to-day?
You know, right now we're allowed 4 hours a week still with our guys. So we're in the gym trying to get them prepared for the change that comes. Practice officially starts next week. So we'll start on Tuesday. So you have that for 1 hour, about 4 days a week. There's recruiting. You're meeting with your staff, trying to get organized and, you know, everything you can do before you get to that first official day of practice to be ready to go for the season.
How much has life slowed down here in year two, just from you've gone through everything once as the head coach of the program? And now, not that you ever get used to it because there's always something, but just the day to day, having an idea of really what to expect.
You know, I think from the work standpoint, it just changes with different rules that change throughout the year. So you never really feel like, all right, here, we got to adjust. We got to keep adjusting. I'm happy not to be looking for a house. That was a big thing at the end of August last year. We finally were able to move in. But the day-to-day stuff, it just changes so often that you got to keep going and you got to adapt and be ready for all the changes. So, you know, I think you go back and look at, hey, what did we do last year on the court? Where were we at? What did we install? Things like that have been much more helpful to go back to have a reference. I save every practice plan, all the stuff we do there. So that part has really helped. But the day-to-day is probably just as wild as from the day I got the job.
You guys played your best basketball at the right time last year. You made that great run in the American Athletic Conference tournament, getting to the championship game. Was there a moment for you when you felt like things clicked and it started kind of rolling downhill and kind of took on a momentum of its own? Like, was it tangible that way?
Yeah, you know, I think, well, first off, Matt, I appreciate you bringing up the end of the run and instead of talking about the 10-game losing streak. A lot of people like to talk about that first, so thanks. You know, it's funny. We played at FAU. I thought we played a really good game at FAU on the road on national TV and lost that game. I remember talking to Coach May after, and he told me that was the best they had played in a long time. And then we come back. We had 6 games left of the regular season. And I think we were just so close. And we had to keep believing. And it's hard. We talk about the stone cutter. Keep hitting the rock, man. Keep hitting. Eventually, it's going to crack. And then when we were able to get that first win, you know, a lot of people asked, you know, how does it feel? And I'm honest. I say what I'm thinking. It was relief. You want to win, right? There's like a We did it. And that kind of got us going to win 4 out of 6 in the regular season and then go play 5 games in 5 days. Was a great experience, and hopefully it's something we have to build off of.
That being said, though, when you have struggles like you referenced, like a 10-game losing streak, when you come out the other side, it is very apparent, given how you guys finished the season, that you came out stronger and that that adversity, while it sucks, obviously, nobody wants to go through it, there are really two paths in front of you. It can tank. It can completely go off the edge, or you can learn from it. And it would appear from the results that this is a group, and you know, including yourself, that you learned from it and got stronger.
Yeah, you know, you learn. I take from every experience, I think you learn, right? Good, bad, and then how do you handle that from what you learn into the next thing? And we didn't change. You know, I meet with all the players at the end of the season. Obviously, you got to figure out, A, are you staying or are you going? That's the first question. And all the guys talked about during that losing streak, we didn't change. We didn't run more. We didn't yell more. We didn't change this. We believed in what we were doing. And we needed them to believe in it. And I think when you have that belief and they stayed the course, and again, I give great credit to my coaching staff. They were awesome, right? It's hard to keep guys positive and all the time when things aren't going your way. But I thought we learned a lot, and I thought we were getting better. And I know it sounds crazy. We believe in the process, and I'm not trying to steal what the Sixers were doing, but you know, we believe in that, like, hey, let's continue to get better every day. Let's get better in film. And you know, it sounds coach talking cliche. Even in the tournament, they were asking me, hey, are you ready for, you know, FAU? Are you ready, Charlotte? I had no idea. I was only preparing for the first game, UTSA. That night, we then prepared for SMU. And I told everybody, hey, we got to get better at film. That's our chance. Each day is different. And how you get better is different. When you play 5 in 5 days, you're not going to practice, right? You're not getting out there for 2 hours. It's the mental part that I think we worked on all year that prepared us for that run.
Obviously, the winning is fun in a situation like that, you know, playing 5 in 5 days. And you guys were all day by day grabbing more and more national attention because of the run you were putting together. Kind of in the foxhole, how exciting was it and how crazy was it to mention, not obviously not practicing, but just like the prep and the getting ready and breaking things down, and we've got a game in 12 hours, and how challenging was it? How satisfying was it, and how much fun was it?
You know, it's a great question, Matt. We get asked that a lot. It was just happening so fast for us, you know, and we were sleeping 2, 3, 4 hours a night. Like, I know it sounds crazy, but I remember being a staff meeting and being like, hey guys, it's like 11:45. I gotta go take a break and then I'm going to get up and watch film. But you know, I think that's where you believe in your staff, and they did a great job helping prepare. And we were literally taking it one game at a time. We told the team, pack through Sunday. And I think, again, they kind of look at you a little bit crazy because we had played our last regular season game on the road. So we had left like on that Saturday. We were gone out in Texas for a long time. So it was really exciting. Like when you get into the locker room with your guys after you win one, like that's the moment that you're excited. And then when you leave the locker room, you get to your phone and you have 200 some text messages every game. And I'm like, oh, geez, I got to prepare. I can't respond to everybody. So next thing you're trying to do is you get on the bus and you're thinking about that game. By the time we got back to the hotel, we flipped the page because we believed in what we were doing. Hey, let's do this again. I remember calling my wife. She's like, it's on the news here every night. And the bars are a little bit crazy in Philly. Like, I had no idea what was going on. You're just in it in the moment. And honestly, I don't think it really hit us until we got home a few days because I'm a huge competitor. Like, you know, I was angry we lost the championship. Like, that I'm on that plane ride, like, not enjoying that we just played 5 in 5 days. I'm angry and fired up that we had lost that game. But it took me probably a week or so to realize the impact it had on our university. It brought, I think, a lot of alumni back together. You know, I used to joke, and I get myself in trouble for saying this. I was like, man, Temple's got one of the greatest histories in college basketball. They've never played 5 in 5 days because they hadn't been that bad in a regular season to have to play 5. So that excitement, people hadn't really experienced every night, hey, coming back. But it was great. And I believed that our guys just enjoyed the moment. And each game was different. Different guys stepped up. Like, that's when I knew we were a team, when I would see highlights of our bench. And I saw the guys on the bench going crazy for the guys that were on the court. And then when they'd sub in, vice versa, like, that was awesome. That was exciting. And but yeah, lost a lot of sleep that week. Well worth it.
You mentioned, you know, back when you talked about like where you are getting ready for this season. And like you talk about at the end of last year, you have conversations. And of course, you're asked guys, are you coming back? And that's kind of, that's life now in college sports, college basketball. I'm curious how you approach, because you're kind of a new generation where, you know, as a head coach, this is life. Like, you don't have like the reference of 20 years ago, because we have seen almost a tidal wave of change. And I think that one of the reasons is because of what the landscape is. How do you approach recruiting? Because 20 years ago, you would think, okay, we've got this kid X playing the 4. He's got 2 years left, so let's recruit his replacement that will be ready to step in as a sophomore. And I don't think you can do that like you used to. It's much more year to year. Is it a fair assessment, and how do you approach recruiting now in the transfer portal world, you know, even NIL, stuff like that?
No, it's a really fair assessment. You're recruiting a new team every year. And what I mean by that is, A, you got to recruit your own guys. So it starts with that. I meet with all of our guys right away. Like, I think we flew back, got in maybe 2-3 in the morning, something like that, on the Sunday after the championship game. I had to go to a coach versus cancer breakfast with the Big Five, which is awesome. So glad to be a part of that. And that was like at 7:30 in the morning. And then next thing you know, I'm texting our staff, hey, can you set up meetings for me for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday with all our guys? And you got to figure out where they're at. And then you got to piece it together. So you are recruiting a whole team. You know, I think every year, you know, you got to figure that out. Hey, the guys that are staying, then you got to piece, what are we missing? And we still believe in the old school method. I like having high school guys. I like being able to build relationships with families that's longer than a week or two in the portal. And you get to know them and get to know how their game is and how they fit. But you got to mix it in. Like, we have to recruit the transfer portal hard too. And then you got to prepare. I think our staff does a great job of preparing. You know, in college basketball, you like prepare for the worst so that, you know, nothing surprises you at this point, whether a guy stays or goes. But you have to have a plan. And I think that's what our staff really did this offseason. We had a plan for everything that happens.
Now let's go back in time, dig into your history. What's your earliest hoop memory growing up?
Ooh, earliest hoop memory. It's a good question. I mean, I remember being young with a basketball in my hand. My dad, you know, loved sports, grew up in Bucks County. So we're like, you know, Sixers, Phillies, you know, Eagles, like being back here, the Flyers. This is awesome for me. I get to wear all the shirts I've had for like 15 years around town and not be yelled at like it was in Miami. Where's your Dolphins shirt? No, I'm an Eagles fan. Sorry, man. Sorry. You know, I think it's that, you know, my brother and I both played, you know, youth sports growing up. My dad got to coach us. Like, those are the best memories I have of being a little bit older and my dad coaching me. And it was a great experience. You know, he was truthful with me, told me when I played really well, and he told me when I played like crap. So I appreciated that.
Was basketball your number one sport as a kid?
You know, it's funny. I loved baseball, played baseball. I think we won a state championship, Warrington, when I was in the 10-year-old state championship, which was a great experience. I played soccer growing up. I was probably pretty good at soccer. But I thought it was too much running. I was like, this is crazy. And I enjoyed the indoor sport, but I loved basketball. Always have loved basketball and knew I wanted to coach early, which I think I got that from my dad. So that was exciting. But we played all three sports growing up all day. You know, you go out to the park, whatever it was, you're out till whatever time playing with your friends. And my older brother, I tried to always compete with him. And so it was fun.
What was it about basketball that you fell in love with?
Yeah, you know, it's just like the ultimate team game to me. You have five guys out there. You all have to be on the same page. You know, I love college football. I love the NFL. Like, you get 30 seconds to call a play and you're talking to people in the huddle. Ours is like, bam, back and forth. You got to trust your players to make great decisions. And I just enjoy, like, there's just something special, especially about college basketball. I just love it. You get the band, the student section going crazy. Like, there's just some type of energy I can't always explain, but it's awesome.
Now, you played at CB East, right? Basketball?
Yes. Yep.
What are some of your favorite memories?
You know, I think it's just being around those guys that you're with. You know, I was lucky to play for Derek Wright, Coach Wright's brother. He was a great coach, great person. He was coming right out of college, so I was able to learn so much from him. You know, I think it's the memories. I got hurt senior year, so I ended up having to help coach a little bit at the ninth grade team, which was a great experience. But it's just the memories of being with your team. Like, there's something special about bus rides after a game victory. Like, those are the memories that stay with me.
So you said you always wanted to coach. What does that look like, you know, 12, 13, 14? Like, is that the age I'm talking, like, where you knew that this was the road you wanted to go? And, you know, were you watching games and in your head thinking what set would you run and stuff like that?
You know, it's funny. I think my mom told me this. I want to say it was second grade when you have to fill out one of those things in class. You know, hey, what do you want to be when you're older? And I wrote coach. It's just something I've always wanted to do. I knew I wasn't good enough to play at the levels I was hoping to play at. So what's the next best thing? And it's coaching. And, you know, I did. I used to have a little notebook and I'm watching games and write things down. You know, especially as I got older, you know, I really took notes. When I was a grad assistant for Coach Wright at Villanova, I used to write everything down he said. I mean, he's one of the greatest of all time in any industry, coach. So just being absorbing all the information I could and writing notes down. But yeah, I was doing that pretty early, taking notes on stuff.
You talk about it, realizing you're not going to be able to play at the level that, you know, obviously most kids and you dream about. Like, was that difficult to swallow, or were you kind of so in the coach space that you're like, oh, okay, well, this will be the way I get where I want to go?
You know, I was really competitive, Matt. So I always thought the level I was at, I could compete. You know, I was going to outwork you. That was something I took great pride in. I'm going to be the first guy in the gym. I'm going to be the last guy getting shots up, even though probably shot like 15% from three, right? I was going to keep working on it, whatever it may be. So I had that desire while I was playing. I always believe you got to live in the moment and do the job that you're supposed to do. So I've always had that mindset. Like when I was playing, I'm here to play. But then obviously I knew after high school, you know, I knew I wanted to coach. What's the next best thing? And I remember meeting some people and they said, go be a student manager. So I became a student manager at Penn State. And like, that was a tough transition. When you go from practicing and, you know, hey, this to wiping up the sweat and having towels and doing laundry, you get humbled really quickly. And it was an amazing experience. It really changed me and put me on this path into coaching.
I would think though, because student managers, any kind of manager, people don't appreciate big reasons why the trains run on time is the job that managers do and the hours you have to put in. It can be a very thankless job. But having that experience, I have to imagine that rounds you out as a coach because you really have that firsthand understanding of what every piece of a program, how important it is. Because I think just about every coach will say it, but I think with some, they might not quite get it. But when you've lived that, you understand not only what goes into it, but what you're able to pull out of it.
No, it was, you know, I joke all the time. It was a first class degree in coaching right there, right? Like I'm sitting in a huddle in Big Ten game and Ed DeChellis is drawing up a play at the end of the game. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. Like, I'm like, oh shoot, I got to give the guy the water bottle. I'm still staring at the board, you know? And, you know, that experience was great. You know, I think Coach DeChellis at Penn State really helped mold my career. You know, between working camps and helping him run camps there with Coach Kanaski and Dan Earl, Hillary Scott, like some great coaches that were there. You learn every asset of the program. And that's been something cool. You know, we owned a family business in Bucks County. My grandfather had it for 50 years. And I tell the story all the time. That's kind of where I learned that if you can know every position to become a leader, it's going to help you. I remember being young, going to work there. And I was like, I'm going to be a waiter. We own this place. Like, we own this. This is, you know, my parents, I'll be a waiter. And my dad's throwing me in the back. And he's like, you got pots and pans after a 300 person wedding. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. No. This is not what I do. I'm out here with the people. And he's like, yeah, this is how you work your way up. So I remember doing that. And then after I upgraded from that, he was like, all right, next spot. I'm like, all right, back to being a waiter. Here we go. And then I became a busboy. I'm like, busboy, I got to carry this heavy thing around and put the plates around. Are you kidding? My clothes are getting dirty. But him and my grandfather and my mom, they all worked there. My brother, it was a great family business. And you know, I learned a lot that you got to know every position and you got to be willing to do every position, no matter what position you're in. There's times right now I grab a towel and wipe it up on the court because I see a wet spot because that's the manager vision in me. Right? I might not have played. I might have the point guard vision. I got the manager vision. There's a loose ball. Go pick it up. Somebody might trip. But it was awesome. Awesome experience. And really, you know, being a manager, it's really up to you to make what you want of it. And I was in the office often. Dan Earl used to show me how he did scouts. And I just sat there with a pen. You know, I listened to how they made recruiting calls on the phone and how they interacted on visits with families. And it was great experience. I learned every day. That was the coolest thing. You learn something new every day.
We need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Temple University head men's basketball coach Adam Fisher in just a moment. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. Discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda, KBB.com's best value brand of 2020. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with Temple University head men's basketball coach Adam Fisher. So you know you want to coach. What is the door that opens that gets you in? I guess Villanova was the first, and given who your high school coach was, probably wasn't that hard to work the network there, but kind of talk us through getting that opportunity as a grad assistant at Villanova.
So I stayed an extra year at Penn State. So I student taught, so I would graduate in 4.5. So I was there in December and I ended up being a substitute teacher while still working for the team as like a grad manager, so to speak, that next semester. So as I was a substitute teacher, I used to email every school and I'd write it down in a notebook, who I emailed, when I emailed. And I remember sending out like 165 emails to director of ops, video coordinators. Hi, my name is, I'm looking to get in the business. And I heard back from 7. And I'm pretty sure, my memory might be a little off on this, 4 of them were like one of those out of the office replies. So they like by accident. And there's really only a couple schools, 2 or 3 that really responded, hey, let's talk. So, you know, that was, it's a frustrating process as you're trying to break in the door. Everybody thinks it just happens like this. I mean, when you get 163 no's when you're trying to get in the door, that's hard to keep coming back and keep coming up and staying positive. But great opportunity at Villanova. Grateful for my time there, you know, working for Coach Right. It was an unbelievable experience. You just learned so much from him and how he runs a program and how he gets the most out of his players and what he does on campus. I mean, I don't know when he slept. He was doing everything for the university.
Working with Jay Wright, where are the biggest lessons? And it sounds like less X and O and more big picture, how to put the pieces of a program together. Were those the biggest lessons you took away from your time on the mainline?
Yeah, you know, I think I learned from him, right? How are you going to build a program and how do you get the most out of everybody? How do you get campus involved? How do you get people, you know, he would go speak a lot of times at classes after practice and things of that nature. And then also the basketball, he's so detailed oriented. I mean, everything he does has a purpose. And that's something that I talk about with my team. Like every practice was, he takes his time to create the practice plan and make sure everybody's on the same page and does an unbelievable job of teaching. I think he's one of the best teachers I've ever been around of the game. So incredible X's and O's. And he's also great at fitting in the personnel to fit what he wants to do, as we've seen. There's a reason he wins the national championships he's won. So that was probably the biggest thing. Those things I learned from him.
As you're taking your steps on your coaching career, Villanova, Boston College, back to Penn State, Miami, at what point do you start to think, I feel like I'm ready to have my own program? I think everybody wants one if you get into coaching, but I think there's a difference between wanting and genuinely feeling like, I think I'm at a point where if the right opportunity came around, I'm ready for this. Do you remember, was there a year or a time when you started to think like that?
You know, I think back to my time at Miami with Coach Larrañaga. And I always say that I consider him like my biggest mentor and the biggest impact he's had on my coaching career, you know, after my dad, you know, from being early. And he really teaches you a lot of things. Again, how to run a program, how to treat people the right way, everybody, making sure your team gets to know the janitors, getting to know, you know, the people that take your tickets at the game, because everybody has an impact on your program. And I thought he's the absolute best at that. And then basketball wise too, you learn a lot. And then he gives you opportunity. He'll say at practice, hey, you go down here, you do this. So now you're like, okay, great. And I remember the first time teaching a couple of drills, I was so bad. It looked so easy. You're like, oh, I could do this. And then you get 4 minutes and you're stumbling on your words and you're trying to rush. And you're like, oh man, we got 1 minute to do the drill. What's going on? But that prepared me, you know, him giving me those opportunities in practice. I remember one time he handed me the board in the middle of a game. Hey, draw up the play that you're talking about. And you're like, oh, your hands are shaking. But those opportunities prepared me. And I always felt, you know, probably after being with Coach for like 5-6 years, I was like, hey, I think I can run my own program. I think I've learned a lot, but never really, you know, Temple is the only job I ever interviewed for a head coaching job. So it wasn't, hey, I'm in a rush. I always felt like as long as you're around good people and you're enjoying what you're doing, like my wife and I, we loved it in Coral Gables. We loved Coach L. You know, we had a daughter and that was a big reason about trying to move closer towards home to go to Penn State. But I thought working for Coach L is when it clicked for me, like, okay, I might be able to do this.
Do you prefer, from a coaching standpoint, practice or games?
Practice. I love practice. We're detail oriented in our practices. You know, I always joke, I want practice to be harder. You know, we try to prepare guys for the unpreparable. We tell them all the time, I can't coach the other team. I can't call them up and say, you know, hey, Memphis, can you play us man-to-man tonight? Because that's what we've worked on. So we want to put our guys in position to go hoop and play in the game. But I love practice. And our guys learn that out quickly. I take practice, you know, very serious. And that's how, you know, I tell them that's how we like to work on our substitutions. You got to produce in practice for me to want to have that trust to play in a game.
Given how competitive you are, love to win or hate to lose, which resonates more?
Hate to lose, right? Like, you know, I joke after wins, I'm like, okay, great. Let's get ready for the next one, right? When you lose, you're like, go back. Let's agonize. You know, I started agonizing, especially early in the season, being a first-time head coach. Oh, man, let me rewatch this game. And I had to learn, you almost got to treat them the same. right? You have to be able to, hey, learn from it quick, move on to the next, and learn on the fly as you continue to go.
Now, you were before your Temple, you, I think it was your third stop at Penn State, and you were associate head coach there. What is the biggest step moving that one seat over from top assistant to head coach? What is the biggest thing you have to get used to? And I'm talking specifically game-wise, not running a program. I think we've dug into that. But just game starts. Like, what's the biggest difference?
Suggestions versus decisions, right? As an assistant, hey, maybe we should run this play. You know, I got to make that choice now, right? And then you got to live with the result, right? It's a substitution. Hey, you think we should get so-and-so in? It's a suggestion. You know, now when it's me standing up there, and I stood up a lot this year, I hope to sit down a little more, but you know, it becomes a decision. And then that's a decision that you go with. And I love getting input from my staff. I think they're great. I think they know how I think. I know how they think. So it works well, but it's that decision-making versus suggestion.
How long did it take you to feel comfortable with everything else, like dealing with the refs and, you know, the table, making sure that the trains are running on time when it comes to timeouts and stuff like that? Did it take a while to get your arms around it all? Or do you feel like, you know, and I'm not, it might sound like I'm making light, but it is a huge step because there's all those things that in the moment that are happening that you have to be able to keep track of. Did it take a while for you, or were you pretty comfortable right away?
You know, I was really glad that we had the two scrimmages. You know, I'm very, I have some OCD. If you ever see my office before I leave, I have two notepads here. The pens are lined up. Like, guys come in and make fun of me. The players will move some things around. I'll know somebody moved it. And, you know, I bring a sheet with me. That I do a game sheet every day. I learn from Micah Shrewsbury, fantastic coach in person. So I have a sheet for every specific game, two cards that I like to look at a lot, how to figure out where to put that. But those two scrimmages, they really prepare me. I didn't know if I was going to sit down. I didn't know if I was going to stand up. So, you know, you get asked, are you going to put your hands in your pocket, arms crossed? I'm like, wait, what? I'm not thinking about any of that. But, you know, I think as the season goes on, you get more comfortable. I'll be the first to say, like, there's sometimes you're like walking around. And, you know, I remember playing St. Joe's this year in the championship game. Obviously didn't go our way, but, you know, that was a new experience. You're at an NBA arena and I'm standing up. I go to turn to my assistants and they're like way further down on the baseline because there's like people that are like fans sitting here. I'm like, wait, you're not my assistant. I got to walk all the way down there. But I think you continue to grow. You know, you continue to work with the referees. You continue to figure out, you know, we practice timeouts. And I learned that from Coach L. So if you ever see us at a 30-second timeout, we always line up to my left would be, you know, we don't use numbers, but be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I always know my fives to my right, our point guards to my left. So as I'm getting ready to draw a play, that's how it is. We work on a full timeout. When you sit down, how do we sit? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Who sits behind? So we practice. Again, that's the coach telling me. We practice everything. We practice subbing and practice. Hey, who you got? You got to talk all those things. You know, we practiced halftime at practice. Hey, let's go in the locker room for 10 minutes. Now we go right back out. You got 3 minutes to warm up because that's a game. So we try to do all that. But I think as the season goes on, I continue to get more comfortable, I would say, on the sideline for sure. But, you know, you learn. Each game's different. Sometimes you watch yourself back on film and you're like, oh my gosh, I was a lunatic that game. I got to calm down. So I have that in the back of my head, or my wife would tell me after the game, wow, I've never seen your face get that red. You got to calm down. I'm worried about you. So I listen to her.
When was the first time as a coach, and not necessarily just as a head coach, but that you did something? It was either you worked with a kid on a skill and you literally saw the light bulb go off, like they got it, or you drew up a play and it came through in a big spot. Do you remember the first time that happened, and what did that feel like?
Yeah, it's a great feeling. You know, specifically, you know, I remember spending a lot of time with Isaiah Wong, went to Bonner High School, came to Miami. And if you ever look at his stats, he struggled in college as a freshman early on. I remember sitting down watching film with him, and you're getting home a little bit later because you're watching film. You're getting in the gym for 20 extra minutes with him, and you're like, man, he's still struggling. He's still struggling. Is this working? Is it worth the time? And then, like, you see him go for 20-something against Carolina, and it, like, clicked. And I remember there was a picture, I still have it, where, you know, he had a huge game. We win at Virginia Tech, and it's just me and him just hugging. And his mom, Lachelle, great lady, posted on social media. She's like, you believed in him from the beginning. And, you know, that moment of joy I have for him, you know, that's what it's about for me. It's to see these guys' excitement. I've been lucky. I've been to, you know, at Villanova being a part of the Final Four and Sweet 16s and NCAA tournaments. So I've had really a lot of fun things happen to me. So now it's for me the joy in seeing those guys get a chance to do some of that.
To that point, in a profession where success is almost universally measured in wins and losses, is it hard to not judge everything by wins and losses. Like, because I think there's a lot of success you can have, and you just kind of told a story that can't be measured by what the standings say. How difficult is it to be in a profession where you're completely, almost completely judged by what the standings say?
You know, it is. I think you got to know who you are as a person. And I judge a lot of things. Obviously, we're always going to be judged on wins and losses. We all know that. That's the bottom line. You know, but I also like to look at, hey, how do you guys do in the classroom? Like, what was your team GPA? What is your graduation success rate? All that stuff. And then it's also, how do you stay in touch with former players? We've had so many guys since we've been at Temple that I've coached at Miami, Penn State. We've even had BU guys come back, Boston University guys come back. Like, that's how I measure the impact that you have. These guys are staying in touch with you years later, and they're coming into your gym to watch practice because they're in town. Or, hey, can I get a quick workout? Like, that's the stuff that I'll take with me. You know, that's the stuff. But again, at the end of the day, you're judged on wins and losses. We know that.
Final question, given everything we've talked about, favorite part of what you do?
I love every day is different. It can drive you nuts, but it's also the greatest thing. And you get to be around young men that are at times in their lives where I think you can have a great impact. You know, 18, well, now some of them are like 23, 24 with the transfer portal and the COVID year. But like having that impact and knowing that you can help change some people's lives, like there's nothing better than that for me. And it's right now being able to do that not far from where I grew up with my wife being right here, my daughter who's almost 4 years old being a part of it, like that's special for me.
Adam Fisher, this was great. Thanks so much for the time.
No, you got it, Matt. Thanks for having me.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Temple University head men's basketball coach Adam Fisher for being our guest this week. Now, if you like this show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, can you do us a favor? Leave us a rating and a review. It would really help us out. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at Matt Leon 1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.